Lectionary Lab Live is recorded in the studios of the 405 Oxford Group, Gainesville, Florida, and Brasstown, North Carolina, a Two Bubbas and a Bible production.
Welcome, everybody, to the Lectionary Lab Live. I'm John Fairless. I'm here with my bubba, Delmer Chilton. Say hey, bubba.
Hey, bubba.
Morning to ya as we move on into the fall season. I tell ya, even down here in the great sunshine state of Florida, I went out to walk with my wife this morning, and just a little tinge of cool in the air. We don't really get much fall, but it was the closest thing we get. Makes me feel like football weather and cooking chili and getting ready for things like, you know, the fall festival and probably the annual stewardship drive and other stuff that just comes along this time of year.
Yeah, well, I tell you, it's a little bit more than a tinge here in the mountains of North Carolina, but it feels awfully good to go out in the morning with my cup of coffee and it's in the mid-50s, maybe high 40s. It feels good about 6 or 7 in the morning.
Well, depending on where folks are listening to us this week, some of them will say, man, 40s and 50s sounds great. And some of them will say, whoo, I'm freezing. I don't need that. So regardless of where you are, these are the texts for the 19th Sunday after Pentecost, September the 29th, 2013. A great run of texts today. You know, I mentioned just a moment ago, stewardship time, annual campaign time in many churches. And it's very interesting, some of the texts we have for this week, especially starting in the gospel with the rich man and Lazarus.
Those who know me know that I am detail challenged and filing impaired. I don't think things through very often. I don't know if my congregation's going to believe me that I picked September 29th for Pledge Commitment Card Sunday without looking at the lesson beforehand. It just fit the calendar right. So I'm going to have to say, you know, I really didn't pick this Sunday because of these texts, but they won't believe me, so whatever.
We wonder how often they believe us anyhow, which is maybe something else this story's going to raise.
Oh, well, it'll be good for a laugh.
That's it. Let's talk about it.
Great Sunday for a series of texts, and all circle around the whole issue of, I think, who do you trust, and where do you look for meaning in your life? The Abingdon Theological Companion to the Lectionary that I refer to occasionally, Alice McKenzie, a preaching professor at Perkin in Dallas, says, God stands by us in adversity and holds us accountable in prosperity as a theme for the lessons today. God stands by us in adversity and holds us accountable in prosperity seems to me to be the theme that runs through all of these texts today.
That's a powerful summary. Standing with us in adversity, holding us accountable when we're doing well. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, this text, this gospel text, Jesus begins with what is known to be a kind of familiar Middle Eastern folktale. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like those jokes we all have, so-and-so went to heaven, and St. Peter met him at the
right,
pearly gates,
right.
Or three men walked into a bar. It's that kind of story. It's very familiar. This recycled folktale that Jesus picked up on, people would have settled back and said, oh, okay, yeah, we know this one, the rich man, the poor man. It follows the regular trail of these stories. You can find them. I mean, you know, the rich man ignores the poor man, then they both die, and then they go to whatever the afterlife is in this vision. By this time in Judaism, it was heaven and Hades, or a bosom of Abraham. You know, the good go here, the bad go. First reversal Jesus does is, wait a minute, the rich man's in Hades, and the poor, impoverished guy who's obviously poor and impoverished because he's a sinner is in the bosom of Abraham? First reversal. The assumption, as you've seen, we've seen all other times in the Gospels, is an assumption by this time that the rich are rich because they are beloved of God. The poor are poor because they're being punished. As they said, well, if a rich man can't go to heaven, who can?
There you go. That's the question.
That's the question. So Jesus has done a reversal. And then in the story, they often had the issue of the person who is in Hades pleading with the person in heaven or the bosom of Abraham to go and give a message to my brothers, my sisters, my family, my friend, whatever, to change their ways.
Yeah. All them that are left behind, I'm worried about them. Would you go take care of them?
Everybody's ready for the discussion of the finality of hell, and so the great chasm has been established and can't be crossed. What they're not prepared for is that what N.T. Wright says in the usual story, when someone asks permission to send a message back to the people who are still alive on earth, the permission is granted. In the usual story, you've got all, it's almost like the revival preacher. It's too late for brother so-and-so, but it's not too late for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in this story, the permission isn't granted. And then Jesus makes that great shift in which he says, you wouldn't listen to the messages we've already sent. Moses and the prophets, what makes you going to think they're going to listen to somebody coming back from the dead?
Right. And as Luke is weaving the story and preparing us, taking us further down the road toward the cross and the resurrection, I mean, obviously we've got a great setup here. We've got a great setup.
Yep.
You touched on the fact that a lot of hay has been made in revival and evangelistic pulpits over the years with this story. And, you know, if you were to leave tonight and it was your last night and a lot about eternal destiny. This is a story about eternal destiny.
Yeah.
As I read it, though, I'm going, you know, I don't think so. Or
not
necessarily so. This is a text about those who get it and those who don't. Those who are able to listen and those who are too busy, too blinded, too encumbered by the cares of the world, by riches, by all of the pursuits that the gospel has been leading us through for the last several weeks, and all of these other great texts we're going to get to in just a moment today really support, but which of us are able to receive the grace of God?
Yeah.
Which of us are able to hear the message of God, the call of God? To me, particularly this time as I seek to handle this text, that's what I'm working with.
It depends on the kind of the theology and the contextual, so you know, the tradition of your community. You know, as someone famously said, we don't read text as they are; we read text as we are.
Mm-hmm.
And so we come to this gospel, reading it from all kinds of perspectives, and many people will come to it reading it in terms of, as you say, most of us, I think, heaven, hell, this great decision. But I think underneath this text, there's a great deal of discussion about life on this side of the grave. A great deal of hay to be made about talking about if you believe that God, Jesus has brought in the kingdom, then the great question is, how shall we then live?
Mm-hmm.
The social gospel folks and the kind of my end of the, my kind of tradition would really focus a great deal here on the rich man and his lack of support and care for the poor man. But I'm not sure that's even the central point.
Personally, I think from this particular text, that's a little bit of a stretch.
That's a stretch. This has more to do with who is listening to the gospel and where do you put your trust? This is one of those of the whole culture had put its trust in a theology that said, if you get rich, it must mean that God has been blessing you. And Jesus challenges that more than any sense of the particular act in this text of how he treated Lazarus.
Right.
Because it doesn't say he, you know, who longed to satisfy his hunger fell from the rich man's table. And the man actually had done as much. You don't have him walking out the door and ignoring him. You don't have anything he's done except be rich while this man's poor.
Yeah. He doesn't boot him away from the table or,
no,
you know.
No. He doesn't do that. So in preaching this text, the point of entry here is not so much the rich man's bad and Lazarus is good. The point of entry is, I think, how do we proclaim a gospel in the midst of a people who have trouble hearing us? How do you make a message plain in the midst of a culture that has so many voices coming at it and has so many other things it can depend on that it almost has a sense it doesn't need God.
Yep, absolutely. Amos, then, as the first reading today, really helps us get into that that idea, that mindset, and certainly illumines, supports, is complementary to, goes right along with this gospel reading. So let's talk about Amos.
Well, everybody loves this phraseology. If you've ever, you know, I had an old Quaker preacher friend, John Sides, and I was in my first parish, and he was at the neighboring Quaker meeting, and he'd call up and he'd say, "What you preaching on?" all the time. And if you mentioned you were preaching on the Old Testament, the next thing he'd say, "Who you mad at? Who you angry with?"
Yeah.
And this is the kind of text from Old Testament that brought that to mind for him. You know, because Amos is letting the rich people have it, you know, and those who are at ease in Zion, those who feel secure, beds of ivory lounge on their cloths. It's kind of like the phrase from Mae West movie, you know, telling somebody to peel me a grape.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of luxurious kind of thing. It reminds me, you remember there was a show on that was called The Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous?
Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, with Robin something other. He was just kissing, you know. Mm-hmm. He was, oh, it's so wonderful and all this. These are the people that Amos is after. Now, more recently, I have seen shows of kind of hip-hop stars and rap stars and all that. And it's called Cribs. You know, and they're showing off their fabulously wealthy places to live. That maybe have no point whatsoever, except the lack of maturity that seems to go with having too much stuff.
Well, we get focused on the stuff. And again, I think that's the point. Even for Amos, he is not giving people down the road simply because they lay on a bed of ivory or they lounge on their couches. For heaven's sake, he even invokes King David, who is, you know, improvising on the harp and singing these songs. It is that last phrase in verse 6.
Exactly.
They got all this stuff, but are not grieved over the ruin of Joseph.
Exactly.
If the stuff is an anesthetic, if the stuff is insulating us from need in the world, if it is insulating us from real life, if the stuff is where we place our trust, if that's our first and last resort, we're in trouble. And Amos is trying to shake us from that relative lethargy.
There are various ways to fiddle while Rome burns.
Yep.
You know, and this is a text that calls us to care about our culture.
Mm-hmm.
Not to retreat, not to separate from it in a way in which we just say it can burn and we're gonna lock ourselves behind various types of gates, you know. I think emotionally there's little practical difference between people who separate themselves through their wealth and separate themselves and survivalist,
mm-hmm.
who retreat into the mountains and stockpile everything and let the world go to hell. Me and mine will be fine.
Right.
And it's all a piece of saying, I only care about that which I care about, and I'm not going to engage with this other. I'm going to take care of me. And there are various ways to do that. Most of us don't consider ourselves wealthy enough to separate and be on beds of ivory. We don't think this has anything to do with us. But I was thinking today, you know, I have a relatively modest income and home and always have. I'm just a regular pastor kind of guy.
Yep.
And I was looking around and I said, well, you know, these people Amos is talking about, they would have been astounded at the electric lights, the computers, the television, the chariot with no horses where I can go at 60 miles an hour anywhere I want to go.
Yeah.
Just think of our relative wealth
mm-hmm.
to where those, and then think of our relative wealth to the rest of the world. Middle-class Americans are in the top 3 or 4% of the wealthiest people in the world.
We live as kings and queens, even with modest incomes and homes by American standards.
It is not a biblical solution then to just give everything away and be poor with everybody else. The solution or the response has to do about caring and engaging with the other folk, and we'll get a little bit more of that as we move into Timothy.
Well, and I'll buy that now with the Amos text. I think that the connection's pretty clear. Let's make our way through Psalm 146. Beautiful for worship, a great psalm. Probably touches the gospel pericope today with breath departing and on that day your plans perish. I mean, that there is coming an end to this life for all of us.
Yeah, exactly. And then, but you move down to 146:7 and go follow. That's the other part of that gospel, which is while you're on this side of the grave, what is your call to do with those things which God has given you? Is this, have you received these things as the rich man in the gospel lesson appeared to think for your own benefit because God loves you? Or have you received these things in order that you might be a blessing and heal God's world? Verses 7-8, execute justice for the oppressed, food to the hungry, set the prisoner's free, open the eyes of the blind, remind us that when Jesus in Luke 4:8-19 stood up and read from the scroll and read from Isaiah, these are the similar things. This was not exclusive to a particular text. This was a notion that flowed throughout the life of Judaism, that God is a God of justice and God calls us to care for the stranger, the alien, the poor, and the needy. And whenever we forget that, God has to call us back to it. Mm-hmm. I think that 7 and 8 and the psalm ties back to the gospel in terms of what is the judgment upon the rich man.
Yeah.
Not that he had, but that he didn't. They didn't use what he had for the benefit of those whom God loves.
Did not appear to share. And what we have been given has not been given just for us. A continual challenge to us. We like our stuff. We like our stuff. Let's do get to the Timothy passage then. And for a semi-continuous reading, we've been making our way through these epistles. This one certainly intersects the gospel reading at an important time and really comes alongside the gospel reading for today.
Verse 10, man, for the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. And in their eagerness to be rich, some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many pains. You could preach a long time right
there.
That's
it. And maybe the most misquoted verse in the Bible. You know, by preachers included, you know, money's the root of all evil. No, it's not. The love of money will get you in trouble, though. And it's not so much, this is not about enjoying money or even having money or thinking about and being a good steward with your money. This word love here is about what becomes most important to you. It's back into the realm of idolatry. And so, yeah, there's a lot here.
Eagerness to be rich is when, you know, as you begin to pursue, it's about wandering away. Now, Jesus says many times in the Gospels, and the Bible says many times, how difficult it is to work on both of those. It goes back to, you know, the text that says, you know, you can't serve two masters. You know, you'll honor the one and ignore the other. And so an eagerness to be rich, if it becomes the serving of the master of richness, then you move away from everything else. And I think just looking around, we can see this happen to many of us. But it's not necessary, but it is a major, major temptation. Then you move with this text into 17 and 18, which I think is kind of the counterbalance to 10 if I'm preaching this text. As for those who in the present day are rich, notice he doesn't condemn being rich.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't say there's anything wrong with being rich. He says, command them not to be haughty. Don't be proud of it or set their hopes on the uncertainty of riches. I think that goes back, I would say, to the psalm. Don't put your trust in princes, in mortals, or in riches, but put your trust on the God who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. And then 18, they are to do good, to be rich in good works, generous and ready to share. If you put 10 with 17 and 18, I just lucked myself into a great stewardship Sunday sermon.
That's just the way it happens sometimes.
That's the outline for the 29th, and the rest of it's commentary, I think. I mean, it has to do with that eagerness of the misdirection, that pursuit of riches can be, and the graciousness of God providing to us as we become a conduit of God's goodness to others.
Absolutely. I love what Paul does here. I love his outline and his flow because, yeah, okay, we get it and we've read the gospel and we hear, yeah, we got to be careful with riches. But I like that he gives us the positive alternative.
Right.
So rather, here's how to build your true wealth, and we get the being good works, being generous, being ready to share, and taking hold of life that really is life. That's a great phrase to end this thing up. And as you were talking there just a moment ago about the haughty, I was thinking of how to unpack that, and I was reminded that, you know, Grandma probably really was onto something by regularly reminding us, now, boy, don't you get above your raisin.
Yeah.
Just remember, no matter how much we are blessed with financially, you get a chance to get a good education, you get a good job, you live in a nice house, don't you get above your raisin. Don't think that makes you anything. It doesn't make you one whit different. What are you going to do with that? And you are right. Are we going to get it? Are we going to get what's important here? Which for me is kind of the theme I'm running through all of these texts.
And one of the things I believe that pervades the whole set of texts, and they work together so well today, is this whole sense of who do you serve mm-hmm. and who do you trust? Mm-hmm. Bob Dylan, you know, you got to serve somebody. Mm-hmm. Remember his gospel album? He had this great song. He said, you got to serve somebody. It might be the devil. It might be the Lord, but you got to serve somebody.
Right.
The question here is not whether you serve your riches, it's whether you serve God with whatever you have. And do you trust God instead of your riches as you go forth? And serving and trusting go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. And the great danger of riches, they're a false idol. Mm-hmm. Because the false God, they're an idol because they are not something you can totally depend on.
Well, if the call essentially of the gospel is to surrender our lives, to let go of all that we have and to accept the life of Christ, the life that God offers, the more you have to hold on to sometimes, the harder it is to let go. And so, yeah, there you have it. We better get finished up here and pick up Jeremiah 32. We've been in Brother Jeremiah here for the last several weeks. I like Jeremiah. What a, in some ways, kind of an odd little story here, but man, this is one of those that will click if you just stop and think about what's going on, surrounding this and what's coming in terms of Jeremiah's prophecy.
Oh, it's a great story. I mean, Jeremiah, you know, there's the siege of Jerusalem. Jeremiah has been proclaiming this is judgment on Israel. So the king has done what all powerful people do and say national security, put the boy in jail. He's hurting the morale of the people.
Right.
And so he's there in jail, and the word of the Lord comes. And then this odd sounding kind of detailed story. And basically God came and told Jeremiah to buy land.
Right.
To make an investment in the future of a country that's about to, that there's no everybody is, you know, they're going to lose.
I've got some land in Syria to sell you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it is one of Jeremiah's acted out parables, but he, you know, he buys the land, takes the deed, and says in the future, and the promise is of God, houses and fields and vineyards shall again be bought in this land. Even before it's completely conquered and they're taken off into exile, the hope of the future of restoration is already proclaimed.
Right.
This is what this acts out. Future hope in the midst of present calamity, is the way I think about it. I remember one of the great Luther lines we Lutherans like to talk about is somebody asked Luther what he would do if he knew the world were coming to an end tomorrow. Mm-hmm. He'd say, I'd plant a tree. That's the same kind of thing. Present action in the face of disaster, eschatological hope. One of the other great stories, you know, you're a hymnist, you know, Now Think We All Are God?
Of course, Martin Rinehart.
Well, you know, Martin Rinehart, at the time he wrote that, was burying about 50 to 100 people a day or more. And the other pastors in the little town where he lived were dead, and they were in the midst of a siege, surrounded by enemy troops. The 100-year, you know, the wars going on in the early 1600s in Europe. He'd lost his wife, his children. He's burying his parishioners. Everything was going wrong. And in the midst of that, he writes, "Now thank we all our God with hearts and souls and voices." So either he was nuts or he was had the spirit of Jeremiah about it.
He could see something the rest of us couldn't quite manage to see at that moment.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's it. Well, and Jeremiah's story just strikes me that there are those times when the word of the Lord, the advice we get, when whether we're reading the scripture, talking to the pastor, praying, you know, at church, and we go, this just doesn't seem to make sense. I don't understand it. This is the perfect story to illustrate that. And that faith is seeing something that can't be seen.
And without taking a side one way or the other, as I sit here on Friday, September 20, Congress is debating as to whether they're going to shut the government down. As they fight about that, we got the situation in Syria unresolved. We got the shootist in the Navy Yard and the continuing debate of gun control, mental health care, and you know, we and that sort of thing. Floods, storms, frayed political process. And in the midst of all of this and fingers pointing and a political process that seems to grind and not get much done, it's a good time to hear, put not your trust in princes. It's a good time to hear about Jeremiah in jail, buying land. Not as an investment strategy, but as a word of that, you know, this world is not our home.
That's it.
God is above all of this.
Join me, brothers and sisters, in a chorus of Nun danket alles Gott. Let's thank our God. Very quickly, Psalm 91, a text that winds its way through the lectionary at several places across the years, actually. And again, I was struck by how apt these metaphors are, and especially, you just described it, you know, fowler snares and deadly pestilence. If we think just a little bit about that, we're going, whoo, yeah, we could get that. And certainly people living under siege, as Israel was, could get that. And yet, God has never and will never forget God's people. That's, to me, that's what Psalm 91 is about. And maybe coming back to the comment you began with, God is with us in adversity. That's a powerful part of that phrase.
Yep. God is with us in adversity and holds us accountable in prosperity.
There you go. That's a pretty good way to wrap it up today, Bubba. I've enjoyed it as always. Texts are rich, and you know, we do talk ourselves into a good idea every once in a while. And so pretty good. Our best wishes, thoughts, and prayers with all of you that will be preaching and teaching the word this week. Thanks for tuning in. I reckon there's not much else for us to do except to tell everybody bye.
Well, everybody bye.
Lectionary Lab Live is a Two Bubbas and a Bible production. Our opening theme is Mama Told Me by Frank Anea. We go out with Mr. Bob Dylan performing You Gotta Serve Somebody.
You may like to gamble, you might like to dance. You may be the heavyweight champion of the world. You may be a socialite with a long string of pearls, but you're gonna have to serve somebody. Yes, indeed, you're gonna have to serve somebody. Well, it may be the devil or it may be the Lord, but you're gonna have to serve somebody. Maybe a rock and roll addict dancing on the stage. Money, drugs at your command, women in a cage. You may be a businessman or some high degree thief. They may call you doctor or they may call you chief, but you're gonna have to serve somebody. Yes, you are, you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
Well, it may be the devil or it may be the Lord, but you're gonna have head of some bigger TV network. You may be rich or poor, you may be blind or lame, maybe living in another country under another name, but you're gonna have to serve somebody. Yes, you are, you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
Well, it may be the devil, or it may be the Lord, but you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
Maybe you're a construction worker, working on a home. Might be living in a mansion, you might live in a dome. You may own guns and you may even own tanks. You may be somebody's landlord, you may even own banks. But you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve
yes,
somebody.
You're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
Well, it may be the devil or it may be the Lord, but you're gonna have to serve somebody. Spiritual pride. Maybe a city councilman taking bribes on the side. Maybe working in a barber shop, you may know how to cut hair. It may be somebody's mistress, maybe somebody's heir. But you're gonna have to serve somebody. Yes, you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
Well, it may be the devil, or it may be the Lord, but you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
Might like to wear cotton, might like to wear silk, might like to drink whiskey, might like to drink milk, might like to eat caviar, you might like to eat bread. Maybe sleeping on the floor, sleeping in a king-size bed, but you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve
yes, indeed,
somebody.
You're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
Well, it may be the devil, or it may be the Lord, but you're gonna have to serve somebody. Now you may call me Terry, or you may call me Timmy. You may call me Bobby, or you may call me Zimmy. You may call me RJ, you may call me Ray. You may call me anything, no matter what you say. You're still gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
Yes, you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
Well, it may be the devil, and it may be the Lord, but you're gonna have to serve somebody.